gasped, slamming his hand into the door again, and I grinned. I dragged my teeth across his back and then licked his skin before kissing him. He moaned, and I held him, closing my eyes and feeling his body quiver. His smell, warm and heady, seeped into my brain. I wanted him to know he deserved better. I wanted him to know that if I were someone else, I'd be his, and I'd love him so good. Running my hands up his chest, I traced the ridges of his collarbone, down the dip between his pecs, and trailed kisses on his back. Reaching over, I pulled a silk paisley scarf off the coat hanger and brought it up to wrap around his eyes. He inched away, trying to turn around, but I stopped him.
"What's this for?" he demanded.
Every bruise on my body throbbed, and it took a moment to answer. "Rules," was all I said. He didn't understand, but he didn't argue either. I tied the scarf around his eyes so he could face me and not see everything. His breathing quickened as he lost sight of the world around him, and I turned him around, looking up at his face. "Can you see anything?" I asked.
"No."
Inching up on my tiptoes, I pressed myself into him, guiding his arms around my body and then wrapping mine around his neck. "And now?" The corner of his lips lifted into a smile, his hands immediately roaming and taking hold of me. He ran his fingers all over my back, the pressure growing as he learned the terrain. And then he slid his hand up my stomach, taking one of my breasts in his palm as he leaned down and took my mouth with his. I sucked in a breath, whimpering at the heat and nerves firing over every inch of my body. Lifting me off my feet, he moved over my mouth, slipping his tongue between my lips, and I groaned, feeling it down to my toes. A sound pierced the air, but I barely noticed as I wrapped my legs around his waist, lost in his body. His lips trailed to my neck, sucking, and I tightened my arms around him, trying to get closer and closer as I felt my eyes roll into the back of my head. "Will?" He squeezed my ass in both hands as I found his mouth again, almost too hungry to register the far-off sound when it happened again. He bit my lips and slipped my glasses off my head, setting them on the table. The sound, a ringing, perked my ears, and I finally blinked my eyes open. "My phone." I pulled away from his mouth, turning my head over my shoulder toward the kitchen, hearing the special ringtone I had designated for Martin. "Shit." I tried to push Will away. "I have to answer it."
"Don't."
He pulled me in tighter, kissing me softly as he rubbed his thumb around my nipple again and again. "Please," I moaned, not wanting to let him go. "It's my brother."
"And I'm your man now."
He took off the blindfold, looking up into my eyes.
"And I'm asking you for tonight."
He started to carry me up the stairs to my bedroom, but the phone rang again. That was 3 times he'd called. I squirmed out of Will's hold, running back down the stairs. If I don't answer, he could come home to check on me. He could find you here. He grabbed my arm, pulling me back.
"Then let him."
He glared down at me.
"I don't give a shit. He won't keep me away from you, so the sooner he knows the score, the better."
My naked body, except for my bottoms, seemed to scream, and even though it was dark and he wouldn't see much, he might still notice the bruises. I had to cover up. "Let me go," I gritted out, anxious. But he didn't. Pulling me in, he lifted me into his arms again and looked up into my eyes.
"Look at me," he said.
I did, the softness in his voice making me forget my brother and my body for a moment.
"I..."
He trailed off, struggling for words.
"I like you."
It sounded like "I love you," and my chin trembled.
"I've liked you forever," he said. "If you talk to him, the spell will break, and the night will be over because you're not the same in the sun. You'll have all kinds of reasons again tomorrow about why I can't have you. Stay with me tonight. Don't talk to him. Don't let anything between us tonight."
Sobs swelled in my chest, and I held his shoulders, wanting to just wrap my arms around him, because he was probably right.
"Or you can come to homecoming with me," he said, giving me a choice. "Tomorrow night."
"Homecoming?" The phone rang again, but we just stared at each other, me in his arms, and my legs dangling. I couldn't go to homecoming. I didn't have a dress. I didn't dance. I didn't want to be around his people. Martin would never allow it.
People would just laugh. I pushed against his hold, diving down to the floor for my cardigan as the phone rang and rang. I looked back up at him, covering myself with the sweater. No, I said. You can go now. I'm sorry I stopped you. He advanced on me, but I turned and ran, slipping on my sweater as I dashed into the kitchen for my phone. I answered. Hello?
What the hell were you doing? Martin snapped. I've called 4 times.
I almost turned to see if Will was behind me, but my heart was beating so fast, I was afraid Martin would hear the shake in my voice. I'm sorry, I stammered. I fell asleep with my phone downstairs.
Of course you did.
His tone was clipped.
We're expecting wind tonight. Make sure the windows are closed, the garbage cans are stored, and the...
But my mind trailed off as he barked in my ear the same orders I'd heard 100 times. I licked my lips, still tasting Will, and feeling the emptiness grow and grow behind me as I heard the front door click shut. I wanted to cry. Martin eventually hung up, and I came back to the foyer, seeing that Will was gone. I stood there for a minute, sick of the guilt and self-hate. I'd done it again. I was a bitter, condescending coward, and hopefully he'd move on to someone like him, happy and bubbly and fun. At least I wouldn't be at homecoming to see him enjoy someone else. Taking myself upstairs, I checked on my grandma one more time and then entered my room, closing the door and plugging my phone into the charger. Walking over to the window, I watched the candle flicker, debating for a moment to leave it alone. But I didn't believe in anything, least of all Reverie Cross. I blew out the candle, the room going dark. Except for the 2 headlights that came into view, shining outside my window. I straightened, looking out to the curb and seeing a matte black car suddenly speed off, its tires peeling and screeching as it raced away. I squinted, but I couldn't see well without my glasses that were still downstairs, where Will left them. It wasn't a truck, I don't think. It wasn't Will. And then I saw it, the glimmer of gold coming from the tree outside. It shook and jingled in the light breeze, the bronze chain draped over a branch that was empty before. I inched closer. What the hell was that?
Chapter 15. Will. Present. I jerked as Iden grazed me with the scissors, the small blade slicing through the thread. A cigarette hung from his mouth, and I pulled it out, taking a drag, as I sat on the table in the kitchen and he stood next to me, removing the stitches at the top of my arm where it met my shoulder. Just a small cut from taking a tumble in the woods last week before Emmy arrived. I stared off, watching her as he worked. She was sly. I'd give her that. Spending years getting the shit kicked out of her had taught her how to hide. Emmy moved around the kitchen, back in the black pants she'd arrived in, but wearing one of Rory's white t-shirts as she fried up meat and added peppers, onions, and cheese. She stole glances over at me every now and then, and I kept my gaze locked on her. A piece of bread here, a wedge of cheese there, some cheesecloth to wrap it up, as well as an orange, and then some more bread. I fought not to smile, admiring how she deflected attention from the hand stealing food to the hand reaching up to grab a plate or snatch a fork out of a drawer. Iden hadn't noticed, because he had Taylor watching her, and Taylor was an idiot. He stood in the corner, under the dead clock, peeling the label off his water bottle and only glancing up at her every now and then. But the glances lingered, drifting down her body as she reached to grab some utensil or bent over to pull out a pan from the cupboard. Iden was the only thing keeping that one on a leash. If Iden weren't here, I knew exactly what Taylor would try to do with her. "Have you ever requested anything other than liquor and cigarettes?" I asked quietly, taking another puff before sticking the cigarette back into his mouth. He inhaled one last time and then dropped the butt into his cup of coffee. "Yes." "Like what?" He didn't answer, and I shot him a look, seeing a smile playing on his lips. Somehow, he got a connection, someone to bring him contraband every month. And while he was a brutal fighter who would go to any length, The alcohol and tobacco were the only other means he had to control us. Or them, at least. Micah and Rory might be with me, but we wouldn't get far if I didn't have Taylor or Iden. I still needed one of them with me before I could leave. This shouldn't have taken so long. I just didn't expect him to be so tough to crack. I had no idea where he was hiding his contraband, and after over a year, I had yet to find it. Taylor walked behind Emmy at the stove, picking up a lock of her hair and smelling it. I clenched my jaw, watching her jerk her head around and move away. "So did you get it?" I continued, prodding Iden. "The other thing you asked for?" He finished cutting the stitches and picked up the tweezers, pulling the thread out of my skin. "Yes." "Then you can get her out," I stated. "I want her gone."
"You want her safe. She is safe."
I thinned my eyes on him. She wasn't, and even if she were, she was messing up plans and accelerating my timeline. I didn't need the distraction.
"She thinks I arranged to bring her here," I told him. "And your pride hurts."
Yes. Right now, she thought I was still obsessed and small-minded, every moment we spent together vivid and tantalizing in my memory. I didn't want her to know that was true. Ever. I was supposed to be somebody by now. I was supposed to make her regret not wanting me, and this was humiliating. She shouldn't be here.
"I'll arrange it," he told me.
I looked at him.
"When we're done with her," he clarified.
Rain tapped against the kitchen window over the sink, the sun already set as Rory and Micah walked into the room, dressed in their best as Micah rushed over to her side and smelled the food. She didn't smile back at him, but she didn't move away either.
"Did she ever mention what kind of alcohol she likes?" Iden asked. "Vodka? Rum? Might help her loosen up. I was thinking of sharing tonight."
I turned my gaze on him, straightening my spine at the threat. "Get her drunk. Get everyone drunk." "No." He yanked out the last stitch, and I hissed, drawing everyone's attention as they looked over at us. Iden leaned into my ear, whispering,
"You think I don't know you're planning something?"
His breath ran down my neck, and fear coursed through me. I hated having him so close.
"You've spent a year whispering in their ears, trying to turn them against me," he gritted out. "But you'll never be able to do what's necessary to take power, here or anywhere in life, William Grayson."
He dropped his tool, meeting my eyes.
"You have no idea what it takes to be me."
He moved away, and I held Emmy's eyes as she watched us, paused in her stirring. I remembered similar sentiments from her years ago, and a similar feeling around my friends, even. Nothing had changed for me here. Not yet. Thunder cracked outside, rain pummeling the windows, and I glared at Emmy as everyone sat at the dining room table and dug into their sandwiches. Her presence made everything harder. I was going to kill Michael when I got home. I was going to drench his fancy fucking suit in his own blood for sending her here.
"How did you know I was an architect?" Emmy suddenly asked.
I shot my eyes to Iden. He stared at her, looking confused.
"The gift," she reminded him.
"What gift?"
"I didn't," he answered.
"There's not much to do here. Figured you'd enjoy drawing."
He gave her drawing pencils? Where did he get drawing pencils?
He sat there in his expensive black suit and black shirt, all of us dressed and shaved at Iden's insistence. I had to admit, nice clothes made me feel human again, but I didn't appreciate this prelude to whatever he was planning. Micah, Rory, and Taylor enjoyed the bourbon Iden gifted to the table, chowing down on their sandwiches and sucking down shot after shot. Emmy scooped up some soup she made with the entree, sipping spoonfuls, while I tried to resist the sandwich as much as the alcohol. I eyed the bottle of liquor, my tongue like sandpaper in my mouth. I wanted the burn of the drink in my throat. I'd been clean for almost 2 years, but only sober for one, and it was still hard. I was sure Iden knew that, and corrupting me was part of his plan. I pushed the glass he'd offered away toward Micah.
"What kind of work do you specialize in?" Iden asked her.
"Homes? Skyscrapers?"
"Restoration," she murmured. "Churches, hotels, city buildings."
And then she looked at me.
"Gazebos?"
I forced a slight smirk, letting her know that I knew that she knew what I did to hers. She may not have deserved it, but... Okay, yeah, she kind of deserved it after she laid waste to my fucking heart. I wanted to break something of hers, too. Fuck it. I was drunk and pissed that night.
"Well, you've come to the right place," Iden told her.
She half-smiled, looking around the room.
"Think they'd mind if I cleaned the place up a bit?"
"You already do." She laughed, and I swore I saw a blush cross her cheeks. She continued drinking the broth, and I cocked my head, studying her. She was flushed. "Why?"
"So did Will ever tell you about Devil's Night?" she asked him. "We celebrate it in Thunder Bay. It's coming up, actually."
Then she looked at me, leaned back against her chair, and pulled at the collar of her shirt like she was hot. I tensed. Something was off about her right now.
"In fact, I hear one of his friends is getting married that night," she said to him, but really to me.
"Michael and Rika?" Didn't know that, but she didn't need to know that. I hid my surprise.
"He doesn't talk about home much," Iden replied.
"Because when people know what you love, they know your weakness, and I didn't trust Iden. I was here to gain strength, not bring more enemies down on my family." Emmy continued.
"It's an annual festival of sorts, but it basically boils down to local rich kids basking in the gloriousness of their privilege."
He laughed. "Yes, I know the type. Too stupid to set the bar higher because they've never been challenged." Her eyes glowed bright, her skin glistening a little. What was going on?
"It happens the night before Halloween," she said,
explaining her vast knowledge of something she barely knew anything about.
"And it's common to pull a prank as part of the ritual."
"Did you join the festivities?" he asked.
"Once."
She met my eyes. "Once? When?"
"Didn't he ever tell you, Will?" she asked me.
I narrowed my eyes.
"Who? And tell me what? She had gone out on Devil's Night? With who and when?"
But I sat there, acting like I knew exactly what she meant because I wasn't fucking asking. She laid her forearms on the table, leaning in.
"Did you ever find what I buried under the gazebo when you burned it down?" she asked. "Or is it still there, under the dirt?"
I balled my fists.
"All the shit you don't know," she said. "So clueless. It's almost comforting how you don't change."
I shot out of my chair, my limit reached and my control gone. I swiped my arm across the table, shoving my plate and shit onto the floor. "You don't get to waltz around this house, shooting off your mouth as if you've been through even half of what I've been through," I shouted. She stared up at me, her eyes piercing.
"This is your life, and it's not my fault," she said, in a hard but low voice. "Drugs and alcohol and more drugs and alcohol, mixed with how many women over the years?"
And then she looked around the table, stopping on Micah first.
"I know your story."
Then she flicked her gaze to Taylor.
And I can only assume you're plagued by every vice in the book, judging from the leering and creep factor. What happened? Accidentally almost killed a girl when you kept the plastic bag on her head too long during sex?
She shook her head and gazed around at all of us.
You're not monsters. You're jokes.
No one moved, her words hanging in the air, because everyone was waiting to see what Aiden would do. No one talked to him like that. But this was how Emery was, quick to judge because it felt better to push everyone away. If she didn't understand us, she didn't have to surrender a single piece of herself. Was she drunk right now? And then it hit me. Flushed skin, sweat. I found her bowl of spilled soup on the table and picked it up, smelling it. The bourbon was faint, but it was there. I darted my eyes to Aiden, and everything was written behind the mild amusement in his. He'd spiked her dinner. Motherfucker. But before I could do anything, Rory spoke up.
I killed a girl, he said.
We looked at him as he sat there, calm and relaxed.
Three, actually.
He took a gulp of his bourbon and set the glass back down.
And four men as well. I drugged them and took them to the lake.
He paused, his gaze falling.
In the dark, at night, deserted, alone.
Em stared at him, unmoving as she listened.
At first, I hurt them.
Rory went on, the memory playing in his head.
Burned them, waterboarded them, cut them, just to see if it would make me sympathetic enough to not kill them, to see if I could stop myself from crossing that line.
Emmy's brow knit, and her breathing turned shallow. I'd heard bits and pieces of what he'd done here and there, but never from his lips. I'd kept my distance when I first arrived, feeling him out. But after a while, I'd realized not everything was as it seemed.
By the third one, he continued, I just started tying them up and throwing them off the boat.
His voice was almost a whisper now.
Someone saw me one night, he told us. Luckily, it was the hillbilly sheriff my parents owned.
He took another drink, emptying the glass and rising from his chair. Emmy tipped her head back, not taking her eyes off of him.
And believe me, they deserved exactly what they got, he said. I'm just ecstatic no one caught me until I was done with all seven of them.
He unbuttoned his suit jacket and drew in a long breath, exhaling it.
Thank you for dinner, he said, leaving the table.
He walked out of the room, and Micah sat there for less than a moment before he followed him. Em dropped her eyes, probably feeling like an ass.
Would she ever learn?
I want her gone, I told Aiden again. He shot me a look.
I can't help you.
Turning to her, he continued.
You're right. We're not monsters.
He reached across the table, taking the bourbon and pouring more into his glass.
Evil doesn't exist. That's just an excuse for people who want quick answers for complicated questions that they're too lazy to deal with. There's always a reason things are as they are.
I want her gone, I growled. He ignored me, taking a drink and holding my eyes. I shook my head, turning to Em.
You know why he likes it here? Because if not for this place, he'd be alone.
Whatever this friendship was forming between them, it wasn't genuine on his end. Aiden Kadir didn't want to leave, and now that he had a woman in the house, there was no reason to. This was his dominion, and I could feel the shitstorm coming.
You couldn't take the shame, could you? I said to him. People finding out the things you liked, the kink and the various ways you liked to fuck. Everything was a secret in your rigid family, and that was fine until you were done hiding it.
He said nothing, his expression unreadable.
I know someone like that, I told him. He couldn't fight for the life he wanted until he was forced to fight alone, He held on to his friends and to his sister so tightly he almost killed us, because in that moment he couldn't bear to see us leave, and he would have rather seen us dead.
Iden's gaze faltered, and I knew something was finally cracking in there. If he wasn't careful, he was going to die here, alone.
"Did you ever forgive him?"
he asked, his tone gentle for once.
"Family does."
He blinked, something churning in his head.
"But he had to submit."
The corner of my mouth quirked.
"Family does."
Damon learned. He'd fucked up, but he learned. He'd hurt so many people so badly that he lost everything, but it was only then that he realized his pride was less important than everything he loved. I felt Em's eyes and looked down at her, almost shaken at how she stared at me, unblinking, like a tiny crumb of the wall inside of her had suddenly peeled away. Silence filled the room. Taylor was at my side, quietly drinking, while Iden and Em just sat there. I wanted to fight. Him, Taylor, something to get rid of the steam rising up my goddamn neck. Lightning struck the sky, flashing through the windows and followed by thunder. Then the lights all around us went out, the room falling into darkness except for the single taper lit on the table.
"Shit," Taylor grumbled.
"Not again." Iden rose from his seat, jerking his chin at Taylor to follow, and they both left the room, probably to check the fuse box or generator. But I still stared at her as I sat down, leaning back against my chair. "You weren't that fucking great," I said. "You were a huge hassle that I indulged in for far too long." She held my eyes.
"I know.
There were girls who were nicer." She nodded, her tone softening.
"I know."
I ground my thumb against the insides of my fingers. "Friends who were kinder."
"Yeah."
"I haven't called you," I pointed out. "I haven't contacted you in any way in nearly 9 years." She opened her mouth, but then closed it, breathing a little shallower. "I don't care what you went through," I said. Again, she nodded. "There were people who loved me, and I wasted time on someone who didn't." My heart hammered as I dropped my gaze to her neck. Her olive skin glowed with a light layer of sweat.
"I understand," she said.
"Fucking bitch." My dick swelled and hardened as I got angrier by the second. "You had years to reach out, but you didn't," I told her. "Believe me, I had time to become well aware you didn't give a shit, and now, neither do I." I saw the lump in her throat move up and down. "I moved on." The candle flickered, a draft hitting us from somewhere in the house. "I kissed others, touched their faces like I touched yours, and spent time with them like I never did with you."
"You don't matter."
Her jaw flexed, and I gazed at her pretty little throat, my fingers humming with the urge to pin her to this table and eat her out until she screamed. "Years of nights," I said, and I wasn't sure if I was saying it more for her or me anymore, but I kept going. "Years of not thinking of you. Nearly an entire life of memories and history that doesn't include you. You were nothing." She stared at me, no longer responding.
"She took care of me."
My voice dropped to nearly a whisper, and I didn't care that she didn't know who I was talking about.
"She listened to me. Made me smile."
No movement.
"Stood next to me," I gritted out. "Fit in with my friends. She's smart, clever, resourceful, and she took the shitty hand life dealt her and still knows how to love people, unlike you."
Her eyes blazed, a fire kindling behind them. "She's hot in the shower," I taunted more. "On the beach, against the wall, on the hood of the car in the rain, and in my back seat." She growled, flying out of her chair and swiping a hand at the candlestick, sending it tumbling to the floor where it extinguished. I couldn't hold back my shit-eating smile. Charging around the table, she made for the door, but I grabbed her and backed her into the wall. But before I could rub in my escapades a little more or wrap my hand around her pretty little neck, she shoved me hard in the chest. I stumbled and fell into the chair, and then she was on me, glaring down and squeezing my neck in her fist. I gasped, fully fucking hard now. She breathed fast and shallow, seething like she wanted to end me with her teeth. Holy shit. I groaned. God, straddle me, please. She glowered, and I searched her eyes, waiting for her to lose control. To show that she grew up, wasn't afraid, and was willing to admit she liked it, and she might like it a lot if I bent her ass over this table right now, fucked her, and used her hair as leverage. She didn't. Growling again, she whipped around and stalked out of the room, and it only took 2 seconds to bolt after her. I threw open the dining room doors, storming into the hallway, and spotted her, running away from me. I raced for her. She glanced behind her, saw me, and bolted, hurrying away, but I caught her. I took her in my arms, hearing her squeal as I pressed my chest into her back. I forced her into the darkened doorway of the drawing room and reached around, taking her jaw in my hand. She tried to wriggle out of my hold, but I didn't give a shit if she drew blood or ripped out my throat. I was seeing this through. I had questions, like why didn't she tell me what was happening at home? Or why couldn't she trust me? I was patient. I would have understood. I wouldn't have disappointed her. But not only did she not trust me, she attacked, and I didn't give a fuck about the why anymore. We all went through shit. I leaned into her ear, ready to finish everything I was saying at the table and make her listen, because it was the least of what she owed me, but panting and moaning hit my ears, a thud hitting the wall. And I darted my gaze through the cracked door into the drawing room. I saw Micah pressed into the bookshelves, Rory behind him and thrusting into him in the dark. God, fuck! Rory gasped, fisting the back of Micah's hair and biting his neck. Em's chest caved, and she collapsed back into me as I pressed my cheek to hers, both of us watching the scene ahead. Hell, if they wanted privacy, they'd be in their room. Both of them shirtless, Micah gripped the shelves in front of him, his black hair in his eyes as Rory gripped the curve of his leg where it met his thigh with one hand and his shoulder with the other, driving into him, their pants hanging around their asses. Emery had frozen, tense but having completely forgotten she was resisting. Sweat glistened across Micah's back as Rory's normally well-groomed hair laid in disarray across his forehead. His brow etched in a mixture of passion, pain, and uncontrollable need as his mouth drifted across Micah's skin, biting and breathing as he rode him faster and faster. I exhaled, snaking my arm around her tighter and watching the looks flash across Micah's face. Looking at them, you'd assume Micah was the one in control. He was bigger, taller, more muscular, and he had that whole dark and dangerous vibe. He wasn't. Rory was the dominant one, and Micah loved every second of it because all he wanted was love. I was like that. Emmy was like Rory. Perfect for me. When she let herself be. I watched Rory reach around and dig Micah's dick out of his pants, already long and erect, and stroke it as he thrust faster and harder. He threw his head back, growled, and Micah shook in the shelves, books falling to the floor as Rory came, pumping his dick and spending himself. He barely took a moment to catch his breath before he shoved Micah onto the couch, pulled down his pants, and dropped to his knees, taking the dark-haired boy into his mouth and returning the favor. Micah's abs and arms flexed as he slouched in his seat and stroked Rory's head, drawing him down again and again onto his cock. "You ever do that to a man?" I asked Emery. She tried to pull away, as if just waking up and realizing I was here. "I never did that to you," she retorted. I spun her around and slipped my hand straight down her fucking pants, diving into her cunt, hot and wet, just like I knew it would be. She whimpered, the feel of her tingling up my arm, and I snatched her bottom lip between my teeth, so turned on and hard at how much I'd missed this. All my friends loved the control, loved to hold them down and make them beg for it, like Rika, Banks, and Winter were their toys. Not me. She dominated me, and I didn't want it any other way. In the classroom, in the library, in the movie theater, in my truck, watching her cash in on my ass was better than actual sex. I could be a bad boy, and I needed to be disciplined. She growled, trying to push me away, but I brought my hand up, rubbing my glistening fingers in her face. And then I crashed down on her mouth, kissing, nibbling, sucking, and tugging her sweet flesh and hearing a moan escape before she tried to push me away again. "I know you know how to take a beating," I told her, whispering over her lips. "But this isn't the kind you're used to." Crashing through the doors to the drawing room, I pushed her back onto the other sofa, ignoring Micah and Rory still going at it a few feet away, and fell on top of her, ripping open her shirt before grabbing her bra between her tits and yanking with full force, hearing it tear apart, baring the golden skin of her beautiful breasts. She struggled, swatting her hands at me as I came down on top of her, smiling as her legs fell open. "Hit me," I whispered over her lips before diving in to kiss her. "Hit me for all the tale I fucked after you, for all the nights I forgot about you, ridden to kingdom come by tits and ass 10 times hotter than you." 10? She taunted me. "Really? Come on. You can afford hotter than that. Maybe 20 times hotter. Still got their numbers?" I laughed bitterly, rising up and pulling down her pants, but she wasn't wearing any panties because I took those yesterday. I came back down, molding my mouth to hers and thrust against her. I glided my hands all over her body. God, she was so damn hot. "Damon was right," she pushed at me. "You are smaller than him." My heart pounded against my chest, fire filling my lungs, and I rose up, yanking her ass down and diving into her pussy, covering it with my mouth. She cried out,
"Will,
I was not smaller, and I didn't need reminding of how the hell she knew what he looked like naked. Sucking and tugging, kissing and biting, I ate the bitch with no hesitation and no mercy. I licked up the sides, nibbling her skin and flicking her clit with my tongue as she squirmed under me, trying to crawl away. She gasped for breath, a sweet sweat glistening across her tight stomach as her nipples hardened to little rocks. Then, moans filled the air. Her body quivered and her thighs fell wide as she lifted her head and watched me lick her pussy.
"Will,"
she panted, threading her fingers through my hair. Rising up, I threw off my jacket and glanced over my shoulder, seeing Micah grin as he watched us. Rory was swallowing his cock, servicing Micah like I was doing to her. Dipping back down, I slowed a bit, kissing her flesh and licking her before sticking my tongue inside, tasting her so warm and wet. Her back arched off the sofa, and she threw her head back, shuddering and clawing my shoulders. Flicking her clit with my tongue, I sucked it into my mouth again and again, her tits bobbing back and forth as she sought it, trying to grind into it and ride my mouth. "That feel good, girl?" Micah called out to her. She nodded, panting with her eyes closed.
"Yeah."
"Be sure to park his ass next to me when he's done with you," he told her, sucking in air between his teeth. "You drop to your knees like Rory, and I can watch both of you swallow us down." Cum leaked out of my dick as I pulsed with need.
"Yeah,"
she whimpered. I placed my hand on her stomach, feeling her shake and her breaths grow erratic. When she sucked in air, holding it again and again, I knew she was right there. Aching and boiling with heat, I tore myself away and stood up, sweat cooling my brow. I wanted to bring her there. I didn't want it to ever stop. And the old me wouldn't have. It took a moment to catch my breath as I stared down at her. She blinked a few times, opening her eyes when she realized I'd stopped.
What?
She breathed out. I leaned down, getting in her face. When you're ready for me to finish that, I said, you come to me. She dug in her eyebrows, gaping. My bed is on the third floor. I rose up, grabbing my jacket. Come and ask me for it. And I left, the appendage between my legs trying to tear a hole in my pants as Micah's laugh followed me up the stairs, along with the shatter of whatever vase Emmy threw in the drawing room that crashed 2 seconds later. That was the hardest fucking thing I'd ever had to do. Like harder than prison, detox, and the Doris Day double feature at the drive-in my mother asked me to take her to when I was 17. Combined.
Chapter 16. Emery. 9 years ago.
Here you go.
Mr. Kincaid handed me a pack of college brochures, secured with a rubber band.
When you apply, though, your acceptance letters will come to your house.
He winked at me, and I gave him a tight smile. Reaching over his desk, I took the booklets. Thanks. Believe me, I knew I'd have to deal with this sooner or later.
I left his office and walked through the main office, heading out to the hallway. My brother expected me to go to college. It was one of the only areas we agreed, and where I didn't experience resistance from him. But that might change if he learned my choices. I wasn't ready for his opinion on the matter, so I asked the dean to request the brochures for me for now. I still had a year to apply and face the fights. I pushed through the doors, opening the top booklet as a few students made their way down the hall.
Ooh, Berkeley.
Someone snatched the booklet out of my hands. I turned my head to see Elle flipping through the brochure.
Hey,
I scolded, reaching for the brochure. She pulled away, looking at it.
You couldn't get any farther away from here, she said. But I guess that's what you want.
I stole the booklet back.
Yep.
Berkeley was at the other end of the country, and I could afford maybe 2 years with the college fund my parents had put in a trust for me. I wasn't planning to use any of it, though. I'd barely slept last night after Will left, spending much of the night replaying him in my head. Part of me sure I should have just let him leave when he tried the first time, and the other half of me sorry that I let him go the second time. But I did decide on one thing that had been troubling me. If my grandmother were still alive when I left for college, my trust would be more than enough to pay for a year at the best convalescent home in Meridian City. That would get her out of my brother's house, and I'd be able to go to school without worry. All I had to do was earn a scholarship, or 10, to pay for my education. I looked ahead, hearing a group of students laughing. Will stood against the lockers, surrounded by his friends, his arms wrapped around Davinia Paley as he lifted her off the ground and stared into her eyes. She smiled at him. My heart sank, and my mouth went dry. I faltered for a moment, blinking and looking quickly away. Looks like he found his homecoming date. What a prick. Elle stopped at my side, following my eyes as I looked up at him again. He held Davinia like she weighed nothing, talking to her and looking playful and happy, while everyone around them, with their clothes and their cars and their friends, looked like a Teen Vogue ad I'd never belong in. He looked over at me, and I dropped my eyes, turning away. It was just as well. I continued down the hall, feeling his eyes on me as I passed, and Elle and I rounded the corner, stopping at my locker. "Will I see you in class?" she asked. "Ugh," she snorted, because she was well aware I hated literature class. Touching my arm, she continued on. "Maybe see you at lunch, then." "See you."
I stuck the brochures into my locker, hiding them at school for now, and pulled out my notebook, The Grapes of Wrath, and the rest of my materials for the morning, stuffing everything into my bag. The bag grew heavier, though, as Will and his friends' laughter escalated around the corner. My patience and silence spent. I couldn't sit in class right now. I wish I could. Show him that he didn't bother me, that Davinia didn't bother me. He should see me tough and unaware of all of it. It was a game I knew well. But I slammed my locker door shut and walked down the hall, passing lit class and taking one flight up to the art room. It was always empty first period, and Mr. Gaines didn't arrive until he absolutely had to. I'd have the room for another hour.
Dropping my bag at my usual drafting table, I pulled my rolls of paper out of my cubby and slid onto my stool, spreading everything out and getting to work. The bell rang. Students raced down the halls outside the doors, but soon everything quieted, and all I could hear were the teachers beginning their lessons beyond the dark, quiet walls of my little hideaway. Using my rulers, I continued the redesign of the bell tower, the one near the cemetery that had fallen to ruins when St. Killian's was abandoned so many years ago. I measured the gables, as well as drew lines for each of the small decorative dormers I was adding. It was an assignment, but I'd love to see it come to fruition someday. Despite my hatred of this town, I loved this place. Its history, the allure of its secrets and traditions, the mysteries that survive the years and the architecture. So many nooks and crannies to get lost in, not only with places like the catacombs or the Torrance Garden Maze that used to be open to the public once a year when I was a kid, but the way every avenue and piece of coastline seemed to have a story. A building out in the world was a building out in the world. Designing something in Thunder Bay wouldn't just stand on its own. It was being a part of something bigger. I worked on my design, getting close to finishing, even though we still had weeks left. I wanted to raise the bell tower again, make it taller, so you could climb it and take in more of the sea. And I wanted to add more bells. And maybe a light, a flickering light at the top. "Hang a lantern aloft in the belfry arch," I recited as I sketched, "one if by land and two if by sea." But it wasn't the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere poem that popped into my head next. I stopped, thinking, or maybe, like a candle, albeit electric, perpetually lit for Reverie Cross, up at the top. I rolled my eyes, shaking my head clear of the idea and dropping my pencil down. Stupid. I looked down at my school bag, reaching down and taking the strap. I lifted it up, digging in the pocket and finding that shiny bronze bauble someone left tied to my tree last night. Pulling it out, I dropped the bag and leaned my elbows on the table, inspecting it. Studying the skeleton key, rusty and worn, I looked again for any markings that might give me a clue as to what it was for, and then I threaded the chain through my fingers, taking a look at the keychain attached. It was some kind of pot, or incense burner, maybe? I turned it over in my hand, confused. Why would someone give me this and then not tell me what it was for? I didn't think it was Will who'd left it. He would have just given it to me when he saw me last night. And that car parked outside my house? The only other thing I could think of was that this was evidence, and someone was planting it on me, but that was reaching. Then I noticed it, the slits on the keychain, in the incense burner, like vents. This was a thurible. They were used in churches. The cathedral in town had one, a big one that swung like the clapper of a bell. I rolled up my blueprints, stuffed them into my cubby, and grabbed my bag, running out of the classroom. I stepped into the cathedral, my eyes going up every time I entered this place. I always liked coming here. It was peaceful, and you didn't feel weird about being alone in a public place here. It was expected. Of course, I'd love it if Thunder Bay had a temple on the rare occasion Martin, my grandmother, and I attended, but no such luck. We had to drive to Meridian City for that. It worked for me, though. If I needed to hide for a while, Martin would never look for me in a Catholic church. "Emery?" someone said behind me. I turned, seeing Father Beer. Everyone knew him.
"Here for confession," he teased. "I'll need to baptize you first."
I chuckled, gripping the strap of the bag over my chest. "I'm still working out how to be an agnostic Jew, Father. Let's not complicate things." I smiled at him. "Good to see you, though." He came to stand beside me. Some devotees were kneeling in the pews, while a couple of others sat in thought, the candles lit in devotion flickering at my side. The Stations of Christ lined the walls around us, and I tipped my head back, admiring how the columns seemed to split into the ribbed vaulting and flying buttresses the way a tree trunk spread into branches. A fantastic mural adorned the ceiling.
"You're in here a lot," he told me.
"It's the architecture." I kept my eyes on the ceiling. "And it's quiet." He sighed.
"Sadly, yes."
He sounded unhappy about that, and I realized it would be better for him and the church if it were busier. He patted my shoulder.
"Rome," he said, "and take your time."
"Thanks." He left, and I took out the key again, studying the kind of lock I was looking for. Rolling the miniature thurible between my fingers, I looked up and took stock of the big one, probably half as tall as me and twice as wide. It hung from a rope and was secured to the side of the church, near a pointed arch above the chancel. Then I lifted my gaze, seeing the gallery above it. There was a door up there. I clutched the key in my hand, looking around me to make sure no one was paying any attention. Then I headed across the nave to the side aisle, past the bay, and turned left at the transept. Climbing the steps, I wound around the spiral staircase and came to the balcony landing, overlooking the nave. To my right, an arched wooden door sat, as buckets and tarps laid on the floor, repairs looking like they'd been abandoned long ago, and the gallery no longer used for seating, since Father Beer barely filled the pews downstairs anymore. No one and nothing was up here, except the light streaming in through the stained glass windows, glimmering red and blue on the old carpet. Opening my palm, I looked from the key to the lock on the door. My pulse rate kicked up a notch, worry and excitement coursing through me, but in a way that made me sick. I walked over to the door and slipped the key in, but when I grabbed the handle and twisted, it opened without me unlocking anything. I pulled out the key and shoved it in my school jacket, opening the door wide and wincing at the screech of the old hinges. Shit! I cast a nervous glance around me, still seeing no one around. Finally, I peeked inside the door, spotting another spiral staircase. I narrowed my eyes. This might lead to a spire. Taking out my phone, I turned on the flashlight and stepped up the stairs, the stone under my shoes, gritty with dirt. I rose more and more, seeing a door on the right. I took out the key again, the tunnel vision in the small, tight space making my hands shake. I coughed, the dust tickling my throat. This was probably stupid. I didn't know who the key came from, and I didn't know what was on the other side of that door. Whoever gave it to me played hard to get just enough by not explaining, so I would be intrigued. I stuck the key in and twisted it, but the door wouldn't give. I jiggled it some more, turning the handle, but it wouldn't open. I spun around, looking left and then right, spotting one more door at the top of the stairs. Holding up my flashlight, I climbed to the top, felt for the lock, and stuck the key in. The click giving way as soon as I turned the key. Butterflies swarmed in my stomach, and I hesitated for a moment, smiling. I'd found it. There could be someone in there, but I pressed forward, opening the door and finding my way with the flashlight. But as soon as I opened it, light swarmed me immediately. I stepped into a room, rafters coming up through the floor and stretching all the way to the ceiling, and I looked around at the windows and the sunshine falling across the floor. What was this? I turned off my phone, dropped that and the key into my pocket, and softly closed the door behind me. Trunks and boxes laid about the perimeter of the room, underneath the windows, and I saw old church paraphernalia strewn here and there. Altar cloths, candle holders, and those things that hold holy water. There was even a set of doors that looked like the ones downstairs for the confessionals. I walked farther into the room, but I stopped, my eyes locking on the bed. White comforter, white sheets on the pillows, everything looking clean and crisp and big enough for 10. What the hell? Then I dropped my gaze, seeing a scrap of paper on the comforter. I walked over and picked it up, the fresh scent of the linens making my nostrils tingle. I read the note, the paper yellowed and nearly falling apart at the creases where it had been folded 1,000 times. It's yours now. Use it well. No one else knows. Do not tell. When you're done, pass it on. The Carfax room hides us from what we want gone. I read it again, but I still didn't get it. The Carfax room? I said to myself. The writing was in black cursive, a little faded, and I folded it up, sticking it in my pocket. This was silly. Someone gave me a key to a room, didn't explain why, and I had no idea if I was the only one who had access to it. I got some of the message, keep the room a secret, but how did it hide me exactly? And obviously someone else knew about it because someone gave me the key. And if it was something I passed on to someone else, then the person who gave it to me got it from someone else too, right? Why me? I drifted around the room, picking through boxes that contained everything from lamps and tools to clothes, costumes, and theater makeup, I stepped slowly and then spotted something that caught my eye. Hesitating, I moved toward a trunk on the floor and pulled out a pink dress, strapless and fluffy with a tulle skirt underneath. I smiled, loving the 50s style of it. Trim waist, little roses in the pattern, the kind of Pepto-Bismol pink that was in fashion decades ago. Why was this here? I guess it wasn't so odd. There was also a top hat and a waffle iron in one of the crates. Oh, the stories this room could probably tell. I laid it back in the trunk, folding it gently and closing the lid before walking to the bed and lifting a pillow to my nose. It smelled clean, like detergent and spring. There was a record player with some records nearby and candles on the nightstand. There was no way I'd stay here, not knowing anything about this place or whether or not anyone else had a key, but it was kind of cool. Another nook, another cranny, another story. Taking one last look around, I left, locking the room again and leaving so as not to press my luck. For all I knew, this was Father Beer's secret place to be the real him, and that dress was his. Clutching my bag, I jogged down the stairwell, slipped the key into my pocket, and stepped into the gallery, closing the door behind me. I'd missed 3 classes, but if I hurried, I'd make the 4th. Taking the stairs, I walked through the church and out the doors, taking the path to the street and turning right. Leaves rustled in the trees, yellows, oranges, and reds fluttering to the ground, and a drop of cool rain hit my cheek. I breathed in the autumn breeze, the key light in my pocket. Do not tell. Part of me thought this was a prank, otherwise I would have gotten some real instructions. But I wanted it to be real. Having my own hideaway made me feel like I was finally part of a town I'd lived in my whole life. Like I belonged here now. Walking down the sidewalk, lost in my head, I barely noticed the car pulling slowly up next to me on the street. I did a double take, seeing the cruiser. My chest tightened. Shit.
It's starting to rain,
Martin said through the open passenger side window as he drove.
Get in.
I'm getting back to class, I assured him, inching down the sidewalk. I said I would help with the decorations for homecoming after school. I started to walk again, but he called out behind me,
Emery, I want to show you something. Now.
I stopped, hesitating. It was no use. He'd tracked my phone. I was out of class during school hours. He came for me. Knots coiling inside me, I stepped off the curb and opened the car door. I slid into the front seat and shut the door, my body tense and ready.
Music? He asked.
But he didn't wait for an answer. Tuning on the radio, he tuned to some oldies station with a volume almost too low to hear. Turning the car around, he headed away from school and took me up into the hills, past the mansions, St. Killian's, and the bell tower. I kept my bag on my body, just needing to hold it. Martin pulled into the cemetery, slowing as we descended the drive and wound around the path to a sea of headstones plotting the landscape on the right and left. Rain hit the windshield, and he pulled off to the side, stopping the car. I let my eyes drift around the grounds, fisting my hands to keep them from shaking. There wasn't a soul in sight. All my excuses came to mind. Which tone of voice might work best? Or maybe I just needed to be quiet. Sometimes if I just let him talk, the yelling would relieve him. He lifted his arm, and I flinched, but then I noticed he was reaching into the back seat for something. Setting a white bag down next to me, he reached into the cup holder and pulled out a soda with the straw already in it.
Eat, he said. It's lunchtime soon.
An ounce of relief hit me, but I knew it meant nothing. He liked to toy with me.
Edward McClanahan, he said, gesturing out the window ahead of us. They're moving his body, Em.
I saw the small digger and that the excavation had already begun, but there were no workers with the rain right now. Just a pile of dirt and a blue tarp over the hole.
Family wants him safe and sound inside their new tomb, he told me. They're hoping the town will forget the dead girl, and in all likelihood it probably will. Out of sight, out of mind.
I clasped my hands in my lap, only half listening.
Every year, those arrogant little losers make their pilgrimage here like they're going to fucking church, he continued. But next year, it won't be Edward in the grave. I bought it today. For Grandmare.
For my grandmother, not his. He never gave a shit about her. She wasn't his. He did what he had to do for appearances, and he bought a woman who wasn't even dead a used grave. a Catholic grave. Did they even allow that? I wouldn't. It wasn't happening. I...
Eat,
he barked. I jumped, sticking my hand in the bag and pulling out the burger as I turned my head out my window and away from him. I took a bite, chewing about 100 times until I could swallow it.
I got a deal on it, he said, since the plot had been used, of course. Get to keep the headstone, too. It'll be shaved down. They'll start working on her name in the next week.
My chin trembled, and I felt the bile rise.
One down, he whispered, and one embarrassment to go.
I sat there, the burger with one bite taken out of it lying in my lap.
I have plans, Emery.
He unfastened his seatbelt, and I closed my eyes.
And you would fit in nicely if you stayed in school and stopped troubling me.
His hand whipped against my face, and my head hit the window. I let out a small cry, fire and pain spreading across my cheek and skull. No! My body started to shake. No matter how I read the signs and braced myself, it was always so much harder than I thought it would be.
I didn't ask for this, he screamed, grabbing my collar and slamming me into the door again. I didn't want it. Why can't you help me out? Why can't you be better?
I opened my mouth to scream, but I gritted my teeth and bared down instead as he slapped me.
God damn it!
He yelled, gripping my collar so tightly the skin on my neck burned.
Just?
He sucked in a breath. I saw tears fill his eyes.
Just be fucking normal. Why do you do that, huh? Why?
Martin, stop! I gasped. I turned and opened the door, but he grabbed the handle and shut it again. Gripping my arm, he threw another hand across my cheek. I squeezed my eyes shut. Not the face! I cried out. But he didn't listen. No longer able to think or care about who saw or knew, he'd lost his mind. The rain pummeled the car, drowning out the sounds of his fists and curses, as I dug my nails into the seat and the taste of blood filled my mouth. Will's truck flashed in my memory, the smell and the feel of him next to me. But after a few moments, I couldn't think of anything. I couldn't remember anything. No green eyes, no beautiful smile, no warm arms around me. My glasses spilled to the floor, and then something wet dripped into my eye. After a few moments, I couldn't even remember his face. I sat there, staring through the windshield and the wipers, barely mustering the motivation to breathe. Martin sat back in his seat, lighting a cigarette as blood spilled off my eyebrow and the cuts stung in my mouth.
It's Devil's Night tomorrow, he said,
as we sat at the stoplight near the village on the way home.
The little devils fancy themselves dangerous, but no one is more of a threat than the person willing to do what everyone else won't.
I cast my eyes to the side, seeing his shotgun in its holder. Sobs lodged in my chest. I could take it. It would all be over. I could sleep at night.
This is my town, Em.
He didn't look at me, the blessed exhaustion calming his voice now.
It will be someday. This will all seem like a dream compared to the nightmare that awaits everyone who stands in my way.
I could sleep forever. I looked out at the rain, my vision blurry through the tears that wouldn't stop. I was tired and sad. And if he didn't die, I would. And it had to be tonight. My inside screamed. I couldn't take it anymore. My fingers balled into fists, every muscle in my body tightening, and my legs were moving before I'd even made the decision. Pushing the door open, I leapt out in the rain, hearing him bellow my name and telling me to come back, but I just ran. I was at the edge, and I didn't want to stop. Digging in my heels and splashing through the puddles, I ran as hard as I could, up the sidewalk and through the grass, back to the cathedral. My hair coated my face, and I didn't look behind me, because I knew he wouldn't leave the car to chase me. And he might suspect I went into the church, but he wouldn't be able to find me. I dashed into the church, slowing my steps to not bring attention, and made my way through the nave to the stairs again. I escaped up to the gallery, behind the door, up the steps, and back inside the Carfax room, locking the door behind me. Safe. Hidden. I walked to the trunks by the window, found the dress, and pulled it out. Emmy Scott was tired and sad, but Reverie Cross was going to homecoming.
Chapter 17. Will. Present. My groin ached, and I flipped over in bed, my cock tenting the sheet. I reached my hand underneath and fisted it, slowly stroking the hard muscle. Fuck. How did that girl always do this to me? She had me about ready to break and go ask her for it instead. I knew she wouldn't come to my room last night after I'd left her in the drawing room. I knew that. I just hoped I was wrong. God, I wanted her. I could chalk it up to being without a woman for so long, but no. It was Emery Sophia Scott, and how good her smiles felt. All the frowns were worth the trouble for just one smile. Or so I used to think. The morning light streamed through my small attic window, warming my chest as everything tingled, and my dick swelled more. I groaned, closing my eyes and wetting my palm with my tongue, diving back down and pumping my cock faster and tighter. From the moment I'd laid eyes on her, everything about her turned me on, and there wasn't a single way I didn't dream about fucking her. It was an obsession from the start. But why? She was moody, intolerant, judgmental. And while I knew exactly where her distrust and hard heart came from, she refused to warm toward me after all this time. If she hadn't by now, she wouldn't. Loving a guarded girl, I had realized, was a Pyrrhic victory. The rare moments of happiness came at too great a cost. But there she was, always in my dreams, beautiful and bare, letting me ride her and lose myself in her lips and scent. I stroked again and again, my cock hard and fully erect, the images of her buried in my sheets, soft and sweet, filling my head as my cock dripped for her. And I went with it. Fuck it. I tried to forget her with others. I went with women who looked nothing like her, so I could get her out of my system, but at the end of the day, it only hurt me more. I tightened my stomach, feeling myself coming, and I envisioned myself inside her, going hard and making her moan. Because maybe if I could screw her, I could leave, and it would be like someone flipped a switch where she no longer mattered. Fuck me, baby, I gritted out, tugging on my dick faster and faster. Come on, spread your legs. In my head, there she was, plastered to the mattress under my weight, and my nose buried in her hair as I drove into her. She kissed me and smiled, and God, she wanted it, the soft skin of her tight stomach sticky with sweat as I moved on top of her. I tensed, jerked, and threw off the sheet, spilling all over my hand, cum shooting out, and I swear I could feel her tight heat over my cock. I knew exactly what she felt like. I gasped and exhaled, melting into the bed as the orgasm racked through me, and I grunted, letting it course. Fuck. Finally, I opened my eyes. A Pyrrhic victory. And here I was, pretty sure that no cost was too great to just be able to hold her. It kind of scared me what I'd pay. Rising from the bed, I grabbed a cloth and cleaned up, tossing it down the laundry chute before yanking a towel that was hung over the chair and wrapping it around my waist. Rory was always in the steam room before the rest of us were awake. I needed some time alone with him, and it had to be today. Descending the stairs, I headed down the hallway, almost hesitating at her room, tempted to make sure she was fine. But I passed by it and jogged down the next set of stairs, heading through the foyer. Taking a left in the quiet house, I walked down the dark hallway toward the natatorium and entered, swinging open the frosted glass door of the steam room. As routine as a serial killer, Rory Gearden sat on the tiled bench, leaning against the wall as vapor billowed around him. He opened his eyes. Hey, I said. He jerked his chin at me. Hey. Going hunting soon? Yeah, he sighed. You coming? Maybe. I could use some fresh air, but I wasn't leaving her in the house alone either. I sat a few feet away, the heat coating my skin like a blanket. I loved steam rooms. It detoxed me, relaxed me, and reminded me of home. The one at Hunter Bailey in Meridian City was twice as big, and it was where Michael, Kai, and I had some of our most important business meetings, if I wasn't too hungover that day. "So Devil's Night, huh?" Rory mused at my side. "This Thunder Bay of yours is starting to sound like an adult Disneyland." I grinned. "I miss it." He grabbed an extra towel he'd brought in and wiped down his face. "Even though that's where your family is?" He assumed I didn't want to see my family. He thought my parents sent me here, so why would I want to go back? Like Micah and Iden, Rory didn't have any faith or trust in the ones who gave up on him. There was no going home for them. Not really. But my situation was different. I didn't deserve to go to prison, but I might have deserved this. It got me clean and sober. Besides, the family I chose would never send me here. They're what I'm returning to, I told him. "Well, I'm never going home," he replied. "I know that without a doubt. My mother won't risk it." Meaning it wasn't a choice of going back. He never thought he was actually getting out. And after what he did, I had to agree they weren't completely unjustified in their concern. Rory was like the Terminator. Rule of law or not, the mission was the only thing he saw. It was like tunnel vision. Those kids deserved what they got, and maybe he seemed to enjoy himself, but whether or not he was wrong was a matter of opinion. As the son to an ambassador to Japan, he was a liability. To me, he was perfect. "And if I do get out of here," he continued, "she'll give me some hotel to run on some low-population island somewhere where I won't draw notice." "Will you draw notice?" I asked. He breathed out a laugh, but didn't answer the question. "You're not unique," I told him, resting my head against the wall and closing my eyes. "Everyone has that point of absolute clarity where conscience isn't a factor. We are who we are, and we want what we want, and there's no question of what has to happen. The only difference between you and the rest of the population is that you reach that point, and most people will never reach it. Not many have the opportunities to be driven to a point of despair or survival and look danger in the eye." "What you did was calculated," I said in a gentle tone. "It needed to be done." He'd found Micah, but he still hadn't found a home, and I had no intention of leaving him to rot here. "I'm lucky," I said, almost to myself. "I have a family full of people who know what going over the edge feels like. They know there's a place inside of us where you make the rules instead of follow them. I'm not alone." Out of the corner of my eye, I saw him turn his head and look at me. "They're a storm," I told him. He remained silent for a moment, and I could feel the wheels turning in his head. He'd fit in nicely with my friends. Leaving the thought to linger, I rose to my feet and walked for the door to go shower. "What did she do to get sent here?" he asked before I had a chance to leave. I gripped the handle, still. Dread settled inside me because she'd interrupted my plans and things had changed whether I wanted to face it or not. Would I proceed, considering her a factor? It wasn't even a question. "Just like the rest of us," I said. "She knows what she did, and no one here is innocent." I left the room, but instead of heading to the showers, I charged back up to my bedroom, the house still asleep as I closed the door and placed a steel bar underneath the handle. Walking to the bed, I pulled off the fitted sheet, lifted up the mattress, and flipped it over. It toppled, partly on the bed and partly on the nightstand, the lamp falling over and extinguishing. Reaching inside the tear on the bottom, I slid my hand between the springs and pulled out the black laptop, walking it over to the table near the window for some light. I opened it, powered it up, and waited for the chat to load. "Are you there?" I typed. "Copy," he wrote after a pause. "He wants you extracted. Soon." "Not yet. There's a development." I didn't want to say too much in case someone was spying on us, and where she was concerned, I didn't know who was involved. "Is there anything you're not telling me?" I asked. "Such as?" I cocked an eyebrow. "Have you sent anyone else in?" I waited a moment for his response, and then the letters flashed in green. "No." "You're sure?" "I don't lie to you," he said. I exhaled, relaxing my shoulders. "Okay, then. It wasn't my people. Either Michael, Kai, and Damon were working on their own, or someone else was behind this. I still knew nothing, but at least I'd ruled out anyone on my end." More text came in. "How many and when?" he asked. "At least 4, I typed. But then I noticed Taylor outside, leaning against the glass solarium door, peering in at something. What was he doing? Quickly, I typed the rest, finishing my sentence. "Maybe 5, I told him. "Hold until you hear from me." Through the glass roof, I spotted 2 figures moving. I thinned my eyes, trying to make it out. Iden. He was holding Emery. I reared back, my gaze sharpening. "Are you safe?" came the next question. But I was gone. Closing the computer and storing it, I pulled on some sweatpants and buttoned them up before jogging down the stairs. I yanked the steel bar away and threw open my bedroom door.
Chapter 18. Emery. 9 years ago. I walked into the school, the hallways dim and the music pounding from the gym. Prom was always held in Meridian City, at an expensive banquet hall or hotel. Homecoming stayed at home. The frilly pink strapless dress I'd found in the Carfax room brushed against my knees, cool air caressing my bare shoulders and back. My long brown hair, parted in the middle, draped around me and in my face, and I left the natural kink wild and shiny. I'd found some theater makeup in the room and used the mascara and eyeliner. Lipstick tinted my mouth. Nothing covered the dried blood that had spilled down my temple, the blue and purple bruising around my eye, or the cut on my lip. My bare arms wore his handprints, no longer aching so much with the ibuprofen I'd taken. I could hide in plain sight tonight because it was almost Halloween, the one time of year everyone could bring what was inside, outside. Opening the door to the gymnasium, I stepped inside, the hair on my arms instantly rising. Music blared, blue and pink lights swirling around the darkened room as decorations and balloons adorned every table. A few dozen couples moved on the dance floor, and I could feel my heart thumping in my chest as I gazed around the room. Was he here? The dance had begun a while ago, the ticket takers and photographers having already abandoned their posts near the door, but I spotted a few sets of eyes turned toward me as I entered the room. Most people wore costumes, while others wore simple masks with their cocktail dresses and suits. They stared, some leaning in and whispering to each other, and it might have been because I was here or because of how I looked, but I didn't care. My feet moved on autopilot, taking me farther into the room as I stepped in my heels through the noise, the dancing, and the looks. Normally I'd run. I'd escape into my phone or a book or another room. Normally I'd... But just then, he was there, and I stopped. He leaned against the wall, surrounded by his friends, away from the crowd and looking amazing in a black suit and a white shirt and no tie. He hadn't seen me yet, and I waited, suddenly paralyzed. I wanted my phone or a handbag or something to hold, something to not feel so alone and vulnerable, but I left my school bag with my wallet in Martin's police car, as well as my glasses, which were probably lying on the floor somewhere. My phone was at the cathedral, turned off. I walked toward him, his scent and arms and smile beckoning me like food, because I was dry and hungry and empty.
I hated home. I didn't love the gazebo anymore. I was tired of school and tired of never seeing anything that didn't drain me, no matter which way I turned. I wanted to see him. I wanted to feel his hand in mine. Ignoring the whispers of others as I passed, I watched him talk and nod, one hand in his pants pocket and the other holding his keys like he was getting ready to leave. I didn't see a date anywhere. He looked away from Kai, noticing me as he met my eyes, and stared, unblinking, as he took in my appearance. The pink party dress, the blood and bruises. Nothing was funny about Reverie Cross's demise, as there was nothing funny about mine. Tonight, I could be seen. Let them all see. His friends turned and looked, following his gaze. Wanna dance? I asked quietly, my heart beating so fast it made the words shaky. I saw the guys shift out of the corner of my eyes, breathing out a laugh that didn't really sound mean, just surprised. Will stared at me, and it took everything I had not to chew on my lip or squeeze my fists. I'd gone too far. He might not be alone. I knew he'd probably have a date, and here I was, stalker girl. I was constantly messing with his head, sending him mixed signals, and yes, he pushed too hard, and no means no, no matter how many times I'd changed my mind, but he and I both knew I wanted this. He just didn't understand why I was holding back. And maybe he was finally realizing that I wasn't worth the trouble. But to my surprise, he pushed off the wall, coming toward me with a soft smile playing on his lips. He took my hand, looking down at me as he led me to the dance floor, and I could see his eyes trailing over the dried blood streaming down from my eyebrow and the bruises on my body. "Part of my costume," I explained. I searched his eyes, unable to look away, because just the sight of him made my heart ache. I had one night, just one night with him. "You didn't dress up?" I asked. His green eyes held mine.
"I didn't want to make it hard for you to find me."
I felt the heat rise to my cheeks, and I smiled. He came alone then. Walking to the middle of the dance floor, he stopped, and I turned to face him. "Mr. Sandman" by SYML began, and I started to move my arms up to his shoulders.